And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to the Snowmageddon episode here in mid-April, on April the 11th, as I just shoveled out. Looks like 9.5 inches of the wet, sloppy snow. It's been a little busy around these parts, Luke. I think we'd both agree with that, wouldn't we?
Yeah, I think we would definitely both agree with that. By the way, how do I sound, Ryan? Does this sound decent? Like, does my volume or anything sound different?
I mean, you sound the same to me.
Okay.
Which I'm guessing what you're going for.
Well, we moved my podcasting recording studio to my basement instead of my spare bedroom. As people may have noticed, I've been very absent on my other podcast that I do with Ryan James. This one we've been a little hit or miss, mostly because my wife and I had a baby, which has taken quite a bit more time than I ever expected.
I'm clapping for you. I don't know if the folks can hear it, but on behalf of Gopher Illustrated, Luke, congratulations on becoming a father. I know that you and your lovely are very excited about it.
Yeah, it's been pretty great. So, yeah, we're very thankful and very blessed. But, let's actually just get into this Gopher football then. My son is going to miss his very, very first Gopher spring game. And why is he going to miss that, Ryan? Like, does it have anything to do with the snow?
Yeah, it's Snowmageddon. Blaine Snowmageddon. His news came out last night that the Gopher spring game, which was slated for 11 a.m. on Saturday, is now no longer going to be at 11 a.m. on Actually, I think it's still going to be at 11 a.m. on Saturday, except you, the listener, you don't get to be there. Only I do. So they decided last night that the spring game is going to be moved from TCF Bank Stadium over to the new Larson Performance Indoor, of which, if you've been to a Gopher practice this spring, you know that there is very limited access on the sideline. There's only one sideline for everybody to stand on. And they wouldn't be able to accommodate the amount of people. Plus, I mean, I guess the biggest thing we have to discuss with this is people need to know, Luke, that this is not a solely PJ Fleck decision. He doesn't get to reside with all the power in this.
Sure.
This is a Gopher athletic department, and I think more importantly, a TCF Bank facilities management decision.
Can I actually take you back to a time when I was a student at the University of Minnesota and one football team called the Minnesota Vikings were playing there? They were playing a December game. I finished my last final of that semester. It was like a December 20th game, something like that. And it had just snowed a ton. And preceding that game, somehow they decided that they were going to try to get students to shovel out for that game by paying them during finals week. I don't know how that worked, but I'd be curious how they were going to actually clear this field or clear not the field, but the actual stands for, you know, the maybe, you know, 5,000 or so people that might have showed up to the spring game.
I think you're overestimating it because the forecast for Saturday, it's an 11 a.m. game. And just by kind of how the earth works, folks, it would have been, you know, at its hottest, like 2:30 to 5, like it would have been mid-30s. I think the wind gusts I've seen today are like in the 50s here around the metro. So all this snow that we have here, me being a Northeast Minneapolis resident, you being a Roseville resident, like we have a lot of snow here.
Yeah.
That would have been 9 inches of the heaviest wet snow we've seen in 2019/2018 winter here, that they would have had to remove from the playing surface, the lower bowl, everything around TCF Bank Stadium for, and then you also have to salt the grounds because holy safety hazards.
Yeah.
And put that together with the fact that I don't think more than 1,000 or 1,500 people would have showed up.
Yeah.
Because it would have been cold, it would have been a lot of snow, and I mean, the reality is the fair weather Gopher fan, in my opinion, isn't going to show up to a spring game when it's 35 degrees, windy. Yeah, the sun's nice, but it's still cold and there's snow everywhere.
Well,
now, am I wrong with that?
No, I think you're right. And if memory serves, I believe it was last year that Wisconsin even canceled their spring game altogether, right? They didn't. Maybe they moved it to their indoor, but
they canceled it.
Yeah.
Where Minnesota moved up their spring game from Saturday to Thursday,
right?
Which, again, if you're listening to this and you're from out of state and you book plane tickets that are non-refundable, I've seen some people on Gopher Illustrated talking about that. This sucks. Like, I get
it. Yeah, it sucks.
This is your opportunity to come up, and they made the decision that they're just going to move it to the indoor where only we, the media, get to view it. It sucks. But I think you also have to understand, like, this is already a losing money adventure for Minnesota because it's free to come. They would have had to figure out, and we're supposed to get more snow here, like a few more inches before, like, Friday at noon. So you would have had to have cleared the playing surface, which, again, that would have been fine. But are we going to get ice today? Are we not going to? And I think the other thing that folks need to understand is, like, the football staff doesn't have a big part in this decision, not as much as I think the athletic department and TCF Bank facilities management does. But you also need to understand that this spring game is going to be broadcast out. I think it's 3 p.m. on BTN. The football staff, with the cold and snowy weather, doesn't want to broadcast a spring game over BTN that's going to show a stadium that's going to have maybe 1,000 or 2,000 fans, have the announcers basically just talk about how cold they are, because we know that spring game announcers, when you're not the number A topic in the BTN that day, is going to not be great. Plus Nebraska, who's going to have their spring game on Saturday, I think that thing's sold out. So this is going to be used against them in recruiting. So for them to mitigate that, for them not to deal with all that, they weren't too broken up about the fact that they just can move it to the indoor. They can broadcast it. They can, you know, do some different things with camera angles and everything to where it's not going to be used against them in recruiting, of sure, which it would have been, I can assure you, immensely.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the final thing, well, go on.
No, I was going to say, like, you know, just from a, there's also the player safety aspect, right? And you've touched, yes, on that a little bit. And that is definitely, you know, where they stand now, at least with, like, running back, that's definitely something to be concerned about.
It is. And again, if you've been driving around the metro today, I just got out of my car here. The streets, especially the side streets, are just straight ice where the tires are. And I think there's a misconception you need to talk about, is that TCF Bank Stadium, back when Luke was watching the Vikings back there in his finals days, had heating coils underneath it. Guys, when the Vikings moved out, they took the coils. So, yeah, you could have cleared the snow off it, but there's still going to be ice, of which it's not going to have time to melt. And that playing surface is going to be 35 degrees with snow and all of it. And, oh, by the way, Minnesota's already had another running back tear his ACL. So player safety, your safety, considering the amount of salt and the amount of manpower that would have been required to clear that entire stadium, it just wasn't a feasible thing.
Right. So Jason Williamson, I think, is the one you're referring to that tore his ACL. He'll be out. He was, you know, Mr. Football in the state of Minnesota, I believe, out of Owatonna, correct? And so, I mean, running back depth in general, we talked about it when we went over the offensive part of the offensive podcast for the spring. Like, there wasn't a ton of depth to begin with, just, you know, with Rodney, Shannon already out. You know, you've got a number of guys that are hurt already. There's got to just be some injury concern in general.
Yeah, that's the big injury news here from the spring. Last time we recorded, I think we were just getting into spring ball. Now we're essentially one more practice today than spring ball, than the spring game here this Saturday. I guess if the only big injury news is that Jason Williamson tore his knee, of which, yeah, it sucks. He's Mr. Football from Minnesota. We had him as a 4-star in 24/7 Sports. He looked like he was really starting to figure out things and how he can contribute at a Big Ten level potentially. He tears his ACL. I remember being at that practice watching the play. It was just a special teams drill where he was trying to break down to get around a block, and he hadn't even got to the block. It was a non-contact injury. He went down really holding that knee, did some tests on the side, and the news came out, I think within 24, 48 hours, that it was indeed an ACL tear, so he'll have surgery here in the coming days. I would be flabbergasted if Jason Williamson sees the field potentially before the bowl game, and even then, I know that the staff does not want to rush him. But the reality is now, Luke, they now have four running backs coming off ACL tears heading into the fall, with Rodney Smith, Shannon Brooks, Trey Potts, Jason Williamson, and, oh, by the way, Nolan Edmonds has been MIA the last few weeks because of an injury as well. I mean, We're looking at a spring game where, when I get there on Saturday, I'm going to see Bryce Williams, I'm going to see Mo Ibrahim for about two series, and then it's going to be Prior Lakes' Preston Jelen, who is going to take the Cole Banham spring game MVP. That's my prediction. But they literally only have two running backs. Mm-hmm. So come the fall, that's going to be hopefully a much different story outside of Williamson, because you'll get Rodney back in a full capacity. You'll have Shannon Brooks back in a full capacity. You'll have Trey Potts back. You'll have Cam Wiley in. You'll get Nolan Edmonds back. I mean, that wide receiver room should be looking much different 5 months from now. Mm-hmm. But for the spring game on Saturday, it's going to be looking a lot different.
All right, let's talk a little bit of recruiting, maybe before we get into the spring defensive portion. I've seen, you know, basically on Gopher Illustrated, but also on Twitter, they've seemingly done pretty well in the recruiting, the early part of the recruiting cycle, maybe is what we should call it, right? Not only just with 2020 guys, but also 2021 guys. So maybe you can give us a quick rundown of what's happening recruiting for those that maybe, you know, don't check you out on Twitter or you know, even on Gopher Illustrated as well.
Yeah, if you're not following me on the Twitter machine, number one, I have no idea how you found this podcast, because if you're not following me on the Twitter machine,
hey, there's word of mouth. There's totally word of mouth, Ryan.
Well, potentially. Again, if between Gopher Illustrated and the Twitter machine, of which someone pointed it out to me. I got a text message. I have over 11,000 followers. You guys are insane. Like, why do 11,000 of you potentially care about Gopher football and Gopher football recruiting, especially considering the decades of mediocrity that we've had? It's been interesting. But, yeah, on the recruiting side of things, it's been pretty good. I mean, as we sit here today, Minnesota's got the number 23 recruiting class in the country. So
still very early, very early.
It is indeed incredibly early. But I will say, I mean, we start out with the headliner, and that's Kai Thomas. I think last podcast I kind of alluded to something like this, where
yep.
I was feeling pretty confident that Minnesota was going to get a commitment in the impending days. And then Kai Thomas comes up for a multi-day unofficial visit, a four-star running back from Kansas there, and Minnesota was able to get him locked down. I think the biggest things to kind of know there are that Minnesota is only going to take Kai Thomas in terms of one running back in this cycle, even though that you will see Rodney Smith and Shannon Brooks graduate. There's still a lot of young running backs that Minnesota has. I mean, we talked about some of them, Bryce Williams, Nolan Edmonds, Cam Wiley, Jason Williams,
Mo Ibrahim,
Trey Potts, Mo Ibrahim. You have a lot of underclassmen scholarship guys at running back, and they feel pretty good about that. But being able to add a guy like Kai Thomas, and for what makes him so special, in my opinion, to kind of put things on a spectrum that people can remember, is I think that Kai Thomas, east-west-wise, is the best Minnesota's had potentially since Jeff Jones. Now, Jeff Jones is still arguably the best running back that Minnesota's had on their roster in 15, 20 years with his just game-breaking ability. You never got to see it because the off-the-field issue is unfortunately – you know, we're able to overcome him, and now he's down, I think, at Waldorf College in Iowa, trying to get one more shot at potentially getting to the NFL. You know, I'm hoping he can figure things out there. But where Kai makes his hay is in the East-West game. He's built like Shannon Brooks, where he's very physically imposing at 5'11", probably 190. He's going to be going to a couple of Nike camps here to see how he tests out athletically against some of the top people in the country. But the way he's able to make you miss in a phone booth is just silly. I mean, this is also a kid who's very physical. If you go watch his tape, if you want to see what Kai Thomas looks like and how his playing style is, you can type into your Google machine Kai Thomas Huddle, H-U-D-L, and watch his junior tape. You'll see he's very physical in pass protection. You'll see that he can really make you miss in a very short space. And I think that's just a different kind of skill set than what Minnesota has on their roster right now, because you have Mo Ibrahim, who's your little inside zone guy, who he's going to run you over and he's going to just continue. He's a grinder. You have Bryce Williams, who's a guy that just wants to get the corner, then use his speed. You have Nolan Edmonds, of which we really haven't been able to see a whole lot of. You also have Jason Williamson, who is still trying to figure out things now. He's coming off an ACL tear, and then Cam Wiley's the speed guy. So you need to have a guy that is going to try to make you miss in a very short amount of space. So Kai Thomas kind of headlines this class. You also have a few other guys we need to talk about, one being Texas offensive lineman Casey Collier, someone that I know that this staff is very high on in terms of a tackle body. I don't think the Gopher staff would say this publicly, but I'll say it on this podcast, that from the people I've talked with around the Gopher program, finding adequate tackle bodies for this staff in the spring has been a little bit disappointing, because if you've been following on Gopher Illustrated, we've talked about seemingly a handful of tackle bodies that Minnesota's been, has gotten Campus that they had quote unquote offers from, and then you see them leave without committing. Well, again, some of it's just the recruiting process, but some of it's, you know, they were listed at 6'5", and then they show up and they're 6'3", not the longest of arms. Well, when they got Casey Colliera up here in early March, I mean, this is a kid that showed up at 6'6", I think 310 pounds with 34 something inch arms. That's really long. That is a very big body. Now, your question to me now, then, Luke, is going to be, well, why doesn't he have any more? Why doesn't he have any of the Texas school offers yet? From what I've heard from people in the recruiting industry and just from the Gopher staff, he's in a part of Texas that you have to go to if you need to, like, if you're going to go there, you got to be going there for a specific reason. He's not in the DFW Metro. He's not in the Houston Metro. And they're very worried about Casey Collier really blowing up to a Texas A&M or a Baylor here very soon. Missouri told him if he would have visited there, he had an offer, but he's one to keep an eye on here as well. And then we got to end the 2020 class here so far with a couple of linebacker commits. One is a little bit surprising to me, that being a junior college linebacker by the name of Juwan Mitchell, where when I heard about a junior college linebacker visiting, I was kind of like, why? And then he committed. I'm really like to the minute some people around the Gopher staff, why did you take a JUCO linebacker? Considering that, yes, Kamal Martin and Thomas Barber and Carter Coughlin are all going to be graduating. But that being said, you still have the two guys you just signed, and Donald Willis and James Gordon. You have Thomas Rush, Braylon Oliver, Mariano Sorimarin, Josh Ani. You still have six underclassmen linebackers. Like, why are you taking a JUCO kid for this upcoming class? And the two responses I got were, we thought he was too good to pass up at a, as a Mike, in terms of a Mike linebacker sideline to sideline, because his main competition there right now isn't on campus yet in terms of with James Gordon. We'll see what Mariano Sorimarin ends up. I wouldn't be surprised if he, Sorimarin anyway, ends up going to Rush End. His body is just developing, and I think he's a legitimate 240 pounds right now. He's still pretty twitchy. He's battling an ankle injury here this spring, but they really want to make sure that they have that future Mike position locked down. And that's what they're going to do to make sure that they have adequate depth there at their Mike linebacker position with Juwan Mitchell. And then the other one being from the Badger State, from Sussex, Hamilton, Lucas Finnessy, someone that does not have a Wisconsin offer right now, someone that doesn't have an Iowa offer right now. Minnesota's his only Big Ten offer. We at 24/7 Sports have him rated as the number three linebacker in the Midwest. Now, I understand that potentially his rating and his offers don't match up yet, yet we are standing here 7 months from signing day, and a lot can come between now and then. What Finnessy is an athlete. He is a basketball kid playing football right now. He's 6'3", 225, very long-armed, someone that played corner and was an all-state cornerback at 6'3", 225 for his high school team right now. Now, I don't know if he's going to switch to linebacker here for the foreseeable future for his senior year, but I know he's someone that the Gopher staff got on campus back in the fall, really liked him, went back, watched his tape this spring during Hell Week. If you don't know what Hell Week is and you're confused about that, Gopher Illustrated members are well acquainted with that and what it means with the Gopher staff. So I encourage you, first shameless plug, it's $1 to join Gopher Illustrated for 1 month. It's $1, literally $1. You can find $1 in your couch and you can join Gopher Illustrated. Or if you like it so much from what we've done the podcast, if you become a new annual subscriber, it's 30% off. Literally, there hasn't been a better time to join right now. So, Finnessy, I know from talking with some people up at NDSU when he went and visited there this past, I think last weekend or 2 weekends ago, they think he's a bona fide stud, and they can't believe that Wisconsin hasn't offered. Now, why hasn't Wisconsin offered? It's the big elephant in the room. Wisconsin believes they've already taken one in-state linebacker. Now, Finnessy would be the next one they've taken from what I've heard from sources. They believe that, you know, they have a better shot at some other four-star guys, including Caden Johnson. We'll see if that's the case. I'd be surprised right now if Caden decided to choose Wisconsin over Minnesota right now. But, I mean, his four top schools would be Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa State, in no particular order there. So Minnesota gets a couple of linebackers. They're still going to take Caden Johnson as well. But I think folks that don't necessarily want to hear about the 2020 class, Luke, they want to hear you start to pronounce some of the 2021 incoming recruits that Minnesota was able to get committed.
Yeah, so the 2021 recruits, we have a couple brothers. They're not twins. They happen to be in the same class. That's what I understand.
That was a very confusing time, because when I first started talking with people close to the staff about these two kids, I think they thought they were twins too, but it turns out that Ethan and Dino are 17 months apart, yet in the same grade, which is a little interesting. But Luke, I want you to try to pronounce the last names here. I know that I've already gotten tweets about people wanting you to try and enunciate this, so I'm going to let you take the first crack.
This is brutal. I'll go with Kaliakmanis.
Ding, ding, ding. It's that new father in you that's able to really figure out the enunciations.
One has to just do the phonics with their kids, right? So,
yeah. So it's Ethan and Dino Kaliakmanis. They are both Greek. So the story is here, Minnesota really, really wanted to make sure that when they took a 2021 quarterback, that they were going to shoot for the moon. Now, they tried that in the last recruiting cycle with guys like Max Duggan, Hank Bachmeyer, a little bit of Graham Mertz to an extent, but they kind of screwed the pooch there early on, different time for a different podcast, that they wanted to learn from those mistakes, and they wanted to make sure that this 2021 guy was going to be legit. So that Kirk Scirocco went out in January, was able to watch Ethan throw, was able to meet with him to a degree that is legal with the NCAA. They were able to get Ethan and Dino up here on a visit in February. They offered Dino at the time. They already had offered Ethan. And then I got word that the Kaliakmanis crew, Ethan, Dino, family, were coming up for like a 3-day visit. Now, anytime I put on Gopher Illustrated, hey, there's a multi-day unofficial visit with a kid that has a Gopher offer that's legitimate, the alarm bells in your head should start to ring going, I wonder if he's on commitment watch. Now, I was a lot more confident than someone going to go for staff were. And then I got word, I think that was a Tuesday night. They were leaving on Wednesday that the Kaliakmanises had pulled the trigger. And Ethan is the big fish. Ethan, we just released our 2021 recruiting rankings here.
Is he the younger one or the older one?
He is the younger one. Okay. Ethan is the quarterback. He's the 4-star quarterback. We have rated as the number 177 overall player in the country right now. He is the second highest rated quarterback to commit to Minnesota in the internet era, only behind right now Clint Brewster. Yes, a Clint Brewster. You thought you were going to get away from a Brewster reference in this. Clint Brewster, if you don't know who that is, it's probably because he didn't pan out. So Ethan, I mean, he's what you want. He's got the ideal size and measurables at 6'4", 190. He had multiple other Big Ten offers. He had an SEC offer, Big 12 offers. I mean, this was a kid that Minnesota is going to have to battle for the next 2 years to hang on to, and rightfully so. And I think the biggest thing that I've talked with some Gopher staff members about what makes Ethan special, we've talked a lot on this podcast about the mental processor of a quarterback. The game slows down for Ethan. At least that's what my sources think anyway. And I think other Power 5 schools agree. Ethan is a special quarterback. And I've even heard, Luke, and I've talked about this on Gopher Illustrated, I would be surprised at this point if Minnesota took a 2020 scholarship quarterback. Like, that's how highly, that's how badly Minnesota wants Ethan, is they may not take a 2020 scholarship quarterback because they want Ethan to really, really know you're the guy. We are pushing in all the chips on you. And I posed the question earlier this week to one of my sources saying, isn't that a little bit scary? And their response was, it's absolutely terrifying. But that's what we need to do to land a caliber of player that Ethan is. Minnesota's all in on Ethan. Ethan's all in on Minnesota right now. In the Minnesota quarterback situation, you look at what they have right now. They have 4 scholarship underclassmen quarterbacks. Now, I would be surprised if come December 30th, if all 4 are still here, just the way that kind of the quarterback carousel continues to rotate. But even still, you would still have, say, Anixted, Cole Kramer and Jacob Clark for that 2020 season. You still have 3 guys. And then by the time Ethan comes in, either Tanner Morgan or Zach Anixted is going into their senior year. And then you have the 2 guys underneath them going into the redshirt sophomore years. I mean, Minnesota's all in on Ethan. I think that's the biggest thing I need to kind of push here.
Yeah, no, that totally makes sense. I guess maybe real quick, what do we have in Dino? You have him termed as an athlete. I think some people that don't follow recruiting closely maybe don't know what an athlete is. So what can folks expect from him?
Yeah, Dino is the older brother. So as we said, Ethan and Dino Calliope-Manis are not twins. They're in the same grade. Ethan is 15 years old, so he's the younger one. Dino is 17 years old. They're both sophomores at Antioch High School in Illinois. The parents really wanted to make sure that they were in the same class, so that's what they did. You know, I think the story is they held Dino for an extra year of preschool or kindergarten to make sure that they were in the same one. And Dino is, personality-wise, these two couldn't be any more different. Ethan is the younger brother. I mean, he's more outgoing. You know, he's got a little bit different in terms of a physical skill set than Dino. Dino is 6'1", 6'2", 190 pounds. He's put up some pretty impressive track times here for a sophomore so far. Minnesota doesn't know what he is yet. Now, at Antioch High School, he played wide receiver. He was one of the main targets for Ethan this past year. Scored, I think, 10 touchdowns on 60 receptions. Minnesota doesn't know if he's a wide receiver, a linebacker, a safety, and PJ Flex told him as much. He's not flipping over an hourglass in some tight room saying, you have to commit. I'm not going to tell you anything more. We're just going to sit here in silence, a.k.a. what every Iowa, Wisconsin, and Iowa State fan thinks happens with a PJ Flex sit-down. But that's where we classify him as athlete. I mean, Minnesota's other two 2021 commits, you have Ethan as the quarterback, Dino as the athlete, and even Sam Jackson, another Illinois kid that Minnesota's really starting to make inroads in. I mean, I know that some Gopher Illustrated members are joking that Illinois is in-state recruiting now. Minnesota has recruited Illinois better than Illinois has in the last, I think, last two cycles, and even into 2021 now, you have a lot of the, you know, three top 15 players in that state coming to Minnesota. I mean, that's going to piss off Lovie Smith, and I know it already has with that Liddyville. So Sam Jackson is another one to where he was the first commitment for Minnesota in their 2021 class. He's an 88, which means he's a high three-star kid. He's someone that we really haven't been able to see live. I know that our Midwest guy, Alan True, really wants to see him at camps this summer because Sam Jackson played wide receiver last year for his high school because hit the quarterback of that team ended up going to Michigan State. And he wasn't going to be able to surpass him as a sophomore. So he moved to receiver. And that's where I think Minnesota sees him at. So when you look at the next couple of years, I think you'll see Sam Jackson play quarterback for his high school team. But I would envision him as a wide receiver in a very high ceiling kid at that.
All right, so let's talk. We know the spring game has been moved indoors, and this is always usually a pretty big recruiting event, maybe. Is that still the case? Is there still going to be visitors on campus, et cetera?
I mean, there's going to be a couple, and I talked about it on Gopher Illustrated already that the staff knew what the impending forecast was, so they've been trying to defer kids not to visit this weekend to an extent because, once again, everybody in Minnesota who's listening to this, look outside. If you want to bring up a kid from Florida or Georgia or Texas, not exactly what these kids want to see from mid-April. It is the reality of what living in Minnesota is like. But when you're trying to sell someone on a university and different things like that, PJ Fleck can do that, but you don't really necessarily want to have this be their first experience. So I think the big name to know for this weekend is a Brooklyn, yes, Brooklyn as in New York City wide receiver, coming in by the name of Justin Bolito, someone that I know that Jim Panagos, who recruits Minnesota for that area, is extremely high on. I know our Northeast guys think, from talking with our Northeast analysts at 247, when I ask them, what do you think of Bolito? They go, well, every time we see him, he's always the best athlete on the field, but New York City football is trash. So they were looking forward to potentially seeing him at one of these spring/summer combine events to see how he stacks up against the other kids in the Northeast. But I know that Minnesota is very excited about Justin Bolito, and Justin Bolito is very excited about Minnesota. It's a multi-day unofficial visit. He's paying his own way, coming with his father and his head coach. And frankly, I'd be surprised if by the end of the weekend you don't hear or see a tweet from me saying I can confirm Justin Bolito is a Gopher.
All right, so let's talk a little bit of defense. Let's kind of round out the spring ball talk. Maybe we'll follow up after the spring game, but you know, usually we don't learn a lot of stuff from the spring game because it's so vanilla. But I think the main thing, at least for me, is you know we saw what Joe Rossi can do in the last you know however many games he got. Was that 4 or 5? I don't really actually remember off the top of my head. But you know what I saw him do was he kind of fit the scheme to the players and less trying to fit the players to the scheme. Do we imagine that's what's going to go forward, or have we found an identity that Joe Rossi is going to run?
I think this is the biggest point for those of you who fast-forwarded to the defensive talk here is we're going to go position by position. I'll give my thoughts. I've been to 3 or 4 practices, and I'll see the spring game as well. My biggest thing with this Gopher defense is the exact point that Luke just brought up, where we're going to go position by position, but like for the defensive line and linebackers, it really doesn't matter in terms of scheme. Because without getting into too much trouble from – the football staff, like they have played 4-3, 3-4, 2-4-5, 1-5-5. They have done a lot of different things. And so for the biggest question on everybody's mind for, you know, we've talked about it as well, is what is Carter Coughlin? My answer is it doesn't matter. In 4-3, he's a stand-up rush defensive end. In a 3-4, he's an outside linebacker. In a 2-4-5, he's, you know, he could be standing in the A-gap along with somebody else. Joe Rossi is going to do a lot of different things with this defense. Now, if you're going to ask me, gun to my head on April 11th, what's the base defense, quote-unquote base defense, that I think you see Minnesota in more times than not this year, I'd say it's a 4-2-5, a.k.a. nickel. But maybe you see that 35, 40% of the time. I truly think you're going to see a lot of different variations of defenses, all dependent upon what the opposing offense is throwing you. Because what Georgia Southern, a.k.a. a triple option offense, is going to throw at you versus what South Dakota State's going to versus what Fresno State is going to do is much, much different. And so you're going to see, because of the personnel Minnesota has with the versatility of guys like Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin, my pick for breakout player of the year come the fall, Boye Mafe, Hopkins Own, you have a lot of different bodies that are going to allow you to do a lot of different things defensively. So please take most of this with a grain of salt in terms of, well, how come you didn't really talk about him in the two deep? Because the two deep is so dependent upon what they're doing. Is it 2nd and 8 against Wisconsin, or is it, you know, 2nd and 12 against Fresno State? Because your run game personnel versus your passing down personnel is going to be very different. So please take that with a grain of salt.
All right, let's talk a little defensive tackle then. As most Gopher fans know, they have to replace Gary Moore, O.J. Smith, and Royal Silver. I guess, Rand, how are they going to do that?
Yeah, I mean, this is when I get into some post-evaluation stuff here from the spring on Gopher Illustrated. Defensive tackle is going to get a lot of talk, and I think rightfully so, because you're without Gary Moore, played a ton of snaps for Minnesota. O.J. Smith, when he was healthy last year, played a lot of snaps, and then Royal Silver played a lot of snaps as well. And what you have behind them replacing them is a lot of unknown. It's a lot of question marks. Yes, you're able to get a Notre Dame grad transfer by the name of Micah Du Treadway, and you also have a junior college guy in by the name of Keontae Shad, but you have a lot of unknowns there. Now, I think maybe the biggest surprise for me this spring has been Micah Du Treadway and also Sam Renner, Maple Grove's own, I believe. Is those have basically been your two starters at defensive tackle for the last couple of weeks here, which I think is surprising some folks, including me. I wasn't, to be honest, anytime you take a graduate transfer, and I think you even saw it on the basketball side of things, like yeah. Brock Stahl was a big-time player, I believe, for that UW-Milwaukee team, yet what was he, the 8th, 9th man for Pitino at times, even deeper on the bench?
Really depending on the matchup too, right? Like,
right.
And grad transfers are never sure things. Even, you know, one, if they're transferring from one conference to the other, right? You don't know if they're leveling up, if they're gonna pan out at a different level. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Like, there's no sure thing in grad transfers, even if they're coming from a big program like Notre Dame.
Exactly. And Du Treadway did play in 20 games for Notre Dame the last couple of years. He just wasn't in the starting mix in terms of getting the amount of snaps he wanted. And Minnesota decided, hey, you can come get all the snaps you want here because we need a big nose tackle body. And Dew Treadway has been that A-gap plugger. And yes, I understand that it's not necessarily the greatest of things, the sexiest of things, that A-gap nose guard role where, hey, all we want you to do for 80% of your snaps is essentially take on double teams and allow our ends to try to get upfield and then our three technique to hopefully be able to rush the passer against the opposing guard. But I think Dew Treadway has done a pretty good job at that. Now, the Sam Brenner thing, I think, surprises me most of this defensive line discussion because I wasn't really expecting a lot of Sam Brenner in 2019. I'll be honest. I really wasn't. Yet, here we are. And Sam Brenner, as a fifth-year senior now, really finally looks to have filled out that frame. Now, I know that there's a drinking game for some folks when I do my practice reports that he looks the part. So if that's you, take your first shot of fireball, please. Sam Brenner is all of 6'5 and probably 280 now. And when you look at the competition he has for that three technique position right now, Keontae Shott is still trying to establish himself. Whereas Keontae Shott, and anytime you bring in a junior college player, I think folks think immediately off the bat, you need to be starting. Well, that wasn't that way for Damian Wilson, Devondre Campbell, Brian Body Calhoun. All three guys start in the spring because the staff wanted to make sure they earned it. Well, the biggest thing for Keontae Shott has been putting on weight. Now, from talking with some people at practice this past week, Keontae Shott has put on 15 to 18 pounds already, and he's only been here 3 months. They were going to do this in phases with Keontae where let's put 15 pounds on you, 20 pounds on you, get you up to that 295 mark, and then now we want you to play. We want you to see what it feels like playing at that weight. And then once we get out of spring ball going from April to late July, let's start to refine that body, make sure that the weight is good weight and different things like that. So I think that's the biggest thing with Keontae Shott trying to push Sam Brenner is Brenner is a fifth-year senior. Keontae Shott is, I believe, a true junior that is just going against Big Ten competition for the first time this spring, whereas Sam Brenner's been doing that for 3-4 years.
All right, so I guess round out defensive tackle for us. I know we had some guys that played last year, like an Elijah Teague, but you've also got some red shirts coming in, I'm sure. So what do we have to expect from the remaining defensive tackles?
So you look at this defensive tackle rotation right now. You have Micah Dew Treadway, Sam Brenner, Keontae Shott, Brenner and Shott really with that three technique. You also have Elijah Teague in there, someone I still have a lot of high expectations for. And I will say Elijah Teague, of all the defensive linemen, Jim Panagos is on more than any of them is Elijah Teague because they're really trying to push him because they know that Dew Treadway is not going to be here forever. He's here for literally 6 more months and then he's gone. They need Elijah Teague to really be able to step up because the defensive line rotation last year was immense. I mean, they rotated 8 bodies through a defensive tackle they rotated 4. You need Elijah Teague to continue to get stronger, continue to do his assignment, and Jim Panagos has really been on him about that. I also think that Maya Nahanatu, a redshirt freshman, is going to get some time this fall. If there's a guy on the defensive line that has the highest motor, I would say it's Nahanatu. He is always going at – he's always in fourth gear. He's always going at 110%, changing his best with that necton mentality. Rim shot, please. He's someone that just continues to get after it, get after it, get after it, get after it. And I know that PJ Fleck, Joe Rossi, Jim Panagos have been really on him about that, and they really love that about him. Now, Nahanatu, I think you'll see rotate from that three technique defensive tackle spot out to strong side defensive end from time to time. He's probably only at about 270, 275 pounds right now, but he's just someone that I think is forcing his way into that discussion. Now, Rashad Chaney is another name that he was a 4-star defensive tackle, someone that was committed to Alabama, Georgia for long stretches of time and during his recruitment ends up coming to Minnesota. I think a redshirt season is going to be in for him, even though, you know, we'll see how it plays out, but he just needs to continue to add weight because you look at the guys ahead of him. You look at Elijah Teague, Micah Dew Treadway, Sam Brenner, Keontae Shott, all 290 pounds, and being able to go against the Curtis Dunlaps and the Blaze Andrews, you're going to need to have a little bit of power behind you, whereas Keontae Shott's game is with his hands, and he's getting pushed out a little bit too often. the final couple of names at defensive tackle that I think need to have big, big off seasons here for them to just even matter in the rotations continue to be Noah Hickox and Malcolm Robinson. Two guys from that 2017 class that really haven't been able to establish themselves. Noah Hickox is healthy this spring. He's really trying to earn reps as that number four, number five defensive tackle, but it's been slow going. And then Malcolm Robinson just has been hurt all spring. I don't have very high expectations for those two guys heading into fall camp.
All right, let's get into defensive end. I know that you're totally driving the hype train on Boye Mafe. People probably are hesitant to join, but tell us why you're so high on him, and maybe some people will be convinced to get on and hopefully not have their hopes dashed as they were one time on this podcast previously.
Yeah, I can assure you, well, in my opinion anyway, this is not going to be Hank Epke 2.0. Boye Mafe has been literally unblockable this spring for Minnesota's offensive tackles. Now, the argument can be made, Sam Schluter and J.J. Gaudet and pass protection isn't great right now. J.J. Gaudet, just because he needs 18, 24 months to get into a weight room in the Big Ten level. Sam Schluter, because he struggles in pass protection. Daniel Falele, he's too quick for. I mean, Boye Mafe is, just, I mean, if you haven't seen any pictures of him, go to Gopher Illustrated and check out what Boye Mafe looks like. He's legitimately 6'4", 250 pounds. He is so twitchy. I mean, you hear all the NFL guys talk about, I mean, that's why Carter Coughlin's going to be a top 60 NFL pick next year, is because Carter Coughlin is so damn twitchy off the line. His quick burst is what gets him the corner, and he can bend so well. Well, Boye is longer than Carter. He's not as quite as twitchy as Carter, but he's still – here's what I'll say. The high school coaching for Boye Mafe compared to what the Eden Prairie coaching staff was is night and day. Carter Coughlin had a much more defined coaching tree, and he knew what he was doing a lot more than Boye Mafe, where I think I've told this story before. When Boye Mafe was a senior, I went to a Hopkins-Wyzetta high school football game. I was sitting there with a couple college coaches in the stands, and we literally watched Hopkins' defensive coordinator put Boye Mafe as a nickel corner at 6'4", 225 pounds for 70% of the snaps. It was the most mind-boggling thing I think I've ever seen. Is you have arguably that year the best pass rusher in the state, and you're going to put him at nickel corner and drop him under coverage 70% of the snaps. So Boye didn't really know what he was doing in terms of pass rushes when he got to the collegiate level. Now that he's going into year three, now that his body has been in 2 years of a Big Ten program, I mean, even personality-wise, he's a much different kid. He was very quiet in high school. Now that he's going into year three in this program, you just see him interact with his teammates with a lot more confidence. You saw the glimpses last year. And I think you're going to see a lot more in 2019 when Minnesota gets into passing down situations. Carter Coughlin and Boye Mafe are going to find their way onto the field at the same time.
All right. So defensive end wise, I know you've touched on Carter Coughlin. You know, he could play a number of different spots, etc. But I expect him, you know, it doesn't really matter. But what I'm curious about is some of these other guys that are going to play defensive line that got time last year. We know that Dilada Boudere has been sidelined with an injury, so there's not a lot to say there. But Ezio Otumu, for instance, Devers, you know, how are they looking? What are their roles going to be this coming year?
Yeah, Carter's still going to be the starter there. But as I said, depending on say it gets to passing down packages, so it's 3rd and 7, 2nd and 10, 3rd and forever, you're going to see Boye and Carter on the field at the same time. So that's where we talk about. Technically, Boye is number 2 on the depth chart right now. Like, if we're going against Wisconsin, you're going to see Carter out there probably more than you're going to see Boye, but it really doesn't matter. Now, Winston Dilada Boudere went down with an injury like 2 or 3 weeks ago. He's been on crutches. There hasn't been a lot of word out on it. Injuries are like Fort Knox trying to get to come out of that football room unless PJ Fleck decides to talk about it. So you've seen Asezi Owatumu get a lot more run here the last 2 weeks. And at the practice on Tuesday, I was at the Vikings facility. Otumiwu just destroyed Daniel Falele. twice, and then on a blitz miscommunication along the offensive line, he was able to get to the quarterback as well. And I know that many on the defensive staff think that Otemiwu, by the time he graduates, is hopefully going to be an NFL guy. But we need to see that flash like we saw on Tuesday so much more consistently, because Dilaidi Boudier was still running ahead of Otemiwu for most of the spring. When Winston was healthy, he was running ahead of Asezi, because even though Asezi has the ideal defensive end body at 6'6", 270 pounds now, he needs to continue to not just be out there to be out there. You have to earn the reps. And so that's where you're hoping that between Otemiwu and Dilaidi Boudier, if he's healthy come the fall, that's where you really need to see the guys kind of come in there. And then we come to the final few guys at this defensive end rotation, where what's Teyon Devers going to do? Because he's a true senior. Well, he will be this fall. What's his role? Now, I know that some on the defensive staff think that he's having a pretty good spring, and I necessarily agree, but who is he going to get snaps over right now? He's not going to get snaps over Carter Coughlin. He's certainly not going to get snaps over Boye Mafe in that passing down situation. So in my opinion, I think he needs an injury to be able to really assert himself and get snaps this year. I also think that some of the redshirt guys from the 2018 class, I think Abby Okonjo is going to be fine. He dealt with a medical condition this past fall where he was not able to practice. He's been practicing here this spring. And he's been practicing here this spring. He's going to be that five technique defensive end. I think that give him another year here to kind of figure out how to play at a Big Ten level, I think he'll be fine. My biggest question mark is Alex Riegelsberger. I don't know what his role is, because I don't know what he is. He's not as twitchy as the rush defensive ends that Minnesota has in Coughlin and Mafe and Devers. He's not big enough to go outside. And so he's also battled injury as well. So I'm really kind of perplexed to see what the next 12 months bring for Alex Riegelsberger, because I don't know, when you look at the defensive end rotation that Minnesota has right now and what they're going to be bringing in terms of more recruits in the fall, where he kind of fits into the mix.
All right, let's talk linebacker. I don't think anybody will be surprised that Kamal Martin and Thomas Barber, they're kind of the feature of this position group. The real question, I guess, from me is, can we see Kamal Martin make that next step to be more consistent?
That's the big question, is replacing Blake Cashman. Is Kamal Martin finally ready to take that next step mentally? Because that's been the biggest thing, is physically he looks as good as any linebacker Minnesota's had here in the last 5 years. He looks the part. Now, Thomas Barber, I will say before we really get into the Kamal Martin talk, Thomas Barber looks about 5'10", like slimmer in his midsection, whereas he's always had throughout his entire career. I mean, he's kind of had a little bit of a mid-drift, and he looks toned, man. I mean, he's a true senior going into this now, and sideline to sideline wise, Thomas Barber, I hope people appreciate him in his final season, because all he does is get through the slosh up front and make tackles. And again, with Kamal Martin, watching him interact with Joe Rossi, or just Joe Rossi with his linebackers, because in addition to being a defensive coordinator, he's also a linebackers coach. Joe Rossi hasn't had to be on Kamal Martin as much as he previous linebacker coaches have been throughout the spring, throughout his tenure. And maybe this is the year that Kamal Martin can put it together mentally. Remember everything in terms of calls. Remember everything in terms of where he needs to be at certain times, who he has in run protection, who he has in pass protection. If that's the case, then man, oh man, we could be in for a special year with Thomas Barber, Kamal Martin, Carter Coughlin at the linebacker position.
Okay, well, then I guess when we look at that third linebacker, we know that Carter Coughlin's going to float around. What else can we expect? Who else could play that third linebacker, you know, when they're playing 4-3, even 3-4? You know, who are these other linebackers that are going to see some significant time?
I think if you're looking for a quote-unquote third linebacker that's not named Carter Coughlin, say Minnesota needs to go 4-3, my front runner by far right now is Thomas Rush. He just looks, he looks the part. He knows the part. I think he's further along mentally, which is the biggest thing. He's further along mentally than Mariano Sorry-Marin and Braylon Oliver right now. And he did play sparingly last year in terms of in the defensive rotation because, once again, who is he going to beat out for reps right now if they're healthy? Kamal Martin, Carter Coughlin, Thomas Barber, Blake Cashman last year? No, you're not going to break that in. But this year, I think you're going to see much more Thomas Rush when Minnesota does need to go 4-3. I think he's as athletically gifted as any one of those guys I just mentioned. I think that Mariano Sorry-Marin, even though he's been battling an ankle injury here the last few weeks that slowed him, I still think he has a bright future ahead of him. And then if there's one linebacker that Joe Rossi has been on more than any other linebacker, it's been Braylon Oliver. He's always seemingly behind them when they're going through install. He's always consistently in his ear trying to make sure that he knows what he's doing, because when Braylon Oliver knows what's going on, you can see the athletic flashes that made him such a highly sought-after linebacker. He can fly sideline to sideline. He can cover you in coverage. But when he is thinking out on the football field, we've talked about this numerous times throughout the years of this podcast, it's never a good thing. And I still think that Oliver is still trying to figure out this Rossi defense, still trying to figure out how things work here at the Big Ten level. But I will say, if that light can just consistently figure out how to go on, he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And the kind of the final guy I want to keep talking about is Josh Ani, which is kind of move us to our final position group in the defensive backs. But Josh Ani, even though I think he's still listed as a defensive back on the roster, he's been working exclusively at the linebacker position. That's what we kind of thought was going to happen. We talked on this podcast like a year ago when he signed from Highland Park here in the Twin Cities. Is his body is developing and putting on weight, and he's too big to remain at safety. So he's kind of working with that third string linebacker group as well.
All right, so when we talk about defensive back, this is a group, that I think that has some talent. We see like a Coney Durr coming back from injury. The affectionately nicknamed Tea Time flashed in the non-conference season. But there's a decent number of guys competing for playing time, right? So let's maybe start with corner. And who's really going to get some run here?
That's the big question. I didn't really think about it too hard over the offseason, but now that I've had a chance to watch 3-4 practices now, I feel pretty good about the corner position just because there's a lot of guys there now that, in theory, have a lot of experience. You have guys like Coney Durr, Terrell Smith, Chris Williamson, Keandre Thomas, a junior college kid by the name of Kelvin Clemens who's here. Philip Howard has now moved over there. I mean, you have plausibly, if you count Justice Harrison there as well, 7 guys that could potentially be seeing playing time. Now, mm-hmm. I think that new corners coach Rod Chance has been waiting for some guys to separate themselves. And in the first couple of weeks of spring ball, I don't necessarily think anybody was. But here in the last couple of weeks, 2 guys, in my opinion, that have seen a lot more reps that I've talked with from sources have started to separate themselves are Coney Durr and Terrell Smith. Coney Durr, for the first time, essentially in his Gopher career, is not wearing a knee brace this spring. You'll remember his first taste of action came in the Holiday Bowl. He was actually had to start at corner because of the amount of – it wasn't injuries. It was suspensions
right
at that time. He had to start at corner, tore his ACL. The next year really wasn't right in flex first year trying to get back from that ACL tear. Last year started slow, didn't really see a lot of playing time, and then those final 4 games – where Minnesota really turned it on, he was a big part of that. Now here this spring, no knee brace for the first time, I think, in his Gopher career since he came in as a true freshman. And he's been making plays. He's been making plays in terms of Minnesota's tackling drills. He's been Minnesota's best open field tackler. And even at the practice on Tuesday, he picked off a Tanner Morgan pass that was too far over the middle on a slant. And he got a pick 6. I mean, if this is the Coney Durr that is finally the Coney Durr that we thought we were going to be getting when he signed with out of high school, where he turned down Virginia Tech, North Carolina, some other bigger places to come to Minnesota, I think this is kind of the guy that you want, especially whereas on the other side of things, Terrell Smith is the higher upside play maybe, but with Coney Durr, he's your best open field tackler. And I think that's kind of the biggest thing that Terrell Smith has to continue to work on as he continues to grow into his body is he's probably the highest upside guy of the corners that has the potential to be really something special because you don't find guys that are 6'1" with his speed and his length. You saw that early in the non-conference last year. He made a couple of plays. But then as the season went on, he kind of got lost in the shuffle, trying to transition from Georgia high school football to Big Ten football, especially as we got into the later months against some more physical kind of teams. And I think that's been a big emphasis for Rod Chance, Minnesota's corner coach, Joe Rossi, the defensive coordinator, and PJ Fleck, is they're trying to get him to kind of change his mindset to where he can come up and be physical in the run game and not just be able to kind of cover with his length and speed in the passing game, Luke.
All right, so speaking of physical corners, Chris Williamson comes to mind immediately, right? He really started to flash towards the end of the season. Seemed to take that, you know, nickel position and kind of owned it as his own. I imagine that's going to be the case going forward into this 2019 season.
I thought we were going to see Chris Williamson at something other than slot corner here this spring. I thought we're going to maybe see him on the outside or at safety. Chris Williamson has literally and figuratively taken every snap as a slot corner. That is his position. We haven't seen much of Antoine Winfield there at all. It's been the Chris Williamson show from the slot.
All right.
Again, are we going to see the Chris Williamson from the first six games where it was kind of spotty, or the final six games where it was much, much better? That's where you're hoping with now Minnesota separating the two position groups with the corners with Rod Chance and the safeties with Joe Harris-Simiak, you're able to see Chris Williamson really kind of prosper in that slot corner role.
All right, so there are other guys like a Thomas and Clemens. Clemens coming in, I think, from a JUCO, right? Pretty highly regarded. You know, what do we expect from them? I know those are players that people are kind of banking on as high upside guys.
These two are two that I'm going to be very curious to see how it plays out going into the fall, because Keandre Thomas has essentially had every opportunity over the last 2-3 years to really take that next step forward, and it just hasn't happened. Now, my biggest question isn't even necessarily for Keandre on the field. It's can Keandre, going into, I think it's going to be his senior year now, can Keandre finally take that next step off the field? Can he continually show up on time for everything? Can he continually put in the time in the weight room? Can he continually put in the time in the fill room? Because there's as much competition as we've seen at the cornerback position because of all the different guys we've talked about. And Keandre now going into his redshirt junior year, I mean, you have Terrell Smith, who maybe has passed you. You have Coney Durr, who you kind of came in with. How are you going to see him perform ahead of you? I think Keandre has the physical skill set to do it. It's just, can he put on everything off the field? And with Calvin Clemens, you'll remember that Minnesota stole him on National Signing Day from a top 25 team in the Kentucky Wildcats, who, again, from all indications, Kentucky was extremely, as the kids would say, shook that happened because they weren't expecting that. Now, with Kelvin, his skill set's a little bit different than the other three corners we've talked about. Coney is your sure tackler, 5'10" guy. You have Terrell Smith is your 6'1" long speed corner who can do a lot more in pass protect or pass coverage right now than in run support. Chris Williamson is your slot corner. Keandre Thomas, does he fit in? 6-foot corner that's long. Calvin Clemens is 6'1 and legitimately 200 pounds. I'm not saying that he's overweight. I'm saying he's got a bigger frame that's already holding more weight than the other corners, and he's the guy that wants to come up and be physical and run support, be physical and man press at the line of scrimmage. It's just him going against legitimate Big Ten wide receivers for the first time, I think, has been humbling for him. Going against Tyler Johnson every day, going against Rashad Bateman, Chris Ottman-Bell. He's been humbled at a few different times, and I think just him adjusting to the speed of the game is going to be very important for his transition to Big Ten football. And I think the last guy worth mentioning here is Philip Howard, someone that, what was it, a year ago, 18 months ago, Philip Howard was the number 4 wide receiver on the depth chart. Now, because of the influx of talent that Minnesota's brought in there, he's been transitioned to the defensive back side of things at cornerback, and I think he's been performing pretty admirably well, considering it's his first real full-time position switch, where last year, halfway through the season, he switched over to DB. You don't really have time during the season to really pull one guy aside to teach him what he's doing. Now in his first full-time offseason as a defensive back, I wouldn't be surprised to see him extremely contribute on special teams, and then We'll see as he continues to develop how he does factoring into this rotation.
All right, so graduating from corner to safety, like you already mentioned, we have two coaches now between the two defensive back kind of position groups. You know, Harris Simiak comes from, I believe, Maine, correct, where he was the head coach.
Yep.
You know, what are we getting out of his guys at the safety position? This is one, I guess, for me, obviously Winfield comes back. That's a sight for sore eyes. But I feel like there's basically question marks after that.
There is. And I'll say this. There's been – I've answered, I think, over 100 questions from Gopher Illustrated members throughout the Gopher spring practices. So once again, shameless plug number two, it's $1 to join Gopher Illustrated for a month. Or if you want to get in long term, of which – thousands have, it's 30% off an annual membership. So at the safety position I've talked about on Gopher Illustrated, Joe Harris Simiak, watching him interact with the safeties is such an interesting experience. In my opinion, I think Harris Simiak is the best teacher on the defensive staff. You don't go from taking the University of Maine to the FCS semifinals when your recruiting base and talent level, in my opinion, is so much beneath the other people in that kind of competition. When you're going against the North Dakota States and you're going against the Eastern Washingtons of the world, to recruit to the University of Maine is tremendously, tremendously hard. It takes a special type of kid that actually wants to go to Maine. And for Harris Simiak to get that defense to be at such an elite level that they got to the FCS semifinals, that means a lot. And to see him kind of just work with the safeties, he doesn't have as much energy as a PJ Fleck would, like a Jim Pan, a Ghostwood, or something like that. Where he is he can raise the energy level from time to time, but you can see him interacting with the safeties in such a hands-on way where between reps, he's in their ear trying to work with them. You watch him work with them in individual group. I mean, these kids know what they're doing, especially where you look at the safety room. There's going to be a lot of transition in the safety room in the next 12 months. How many games are we going to get out of Antoine Winfield, who is currently healthy, currently been going through practice full speed? He's been getting a limited amount of reps because Minnesota's trying to keep him healthy. Antoine Winfield looks as good as he ever has. I'm not worried about that. The question is behind him and behind, you know, who else is going to play safety? The two guys at the top of the list right now are Benny Sapp and Jordan Howden. Jordan Howden should never have played in 2018, but that was the reality of where Minnesota was at the safety position. There was no depth. Rob Smith continually decided to put Jordan Howden on an island against some of the best in-space playmakers in the Big Ten, and that got Rob Smith fired. Now Jordan Howden gets an offseason beneath him. He gets another year with Joe Rossi's defense, and he gets a lot more hands-on coaching with Joe Harris Simiak now that Minnesota's decided to split up the secondary. With the safety position, I will say this. It's tough for me to kind of evaluate them during spring ball because they've been going to thud and not been going to the ground. So to see would he have actually came up and made that play at the line of scrimmage and, you know, made it a 3-yard gain, or would he have been shook and it would have been a 70-yard touchdown? It's so hard to see that. And that's why on Saturday, even though, again, unfortunately you guys don't get to be there, that's probably at the top of my list is how do the safeties tackle? Because Antoine Winfield's not going to get very little reps at all. It's going to be the Benny Sapp and the Jordan Howden show. And Jordan Howden struggled in space last year to really break down and make the tackle. And now we also get to see Benny Sapp and how he performs in his first true full offseason in about 5 years. The last time that he was able to go through an entire year of football was his freshman year. And that's when the Alabamas and the Georgias and the Clemsons of the world offered so early on. And then as a sophomore, as a junior, and as a senior, he had off-season knee surgeries. As a true freshman this last year, Minnesota really wanted to make sure they eased him into it. He played on special teams in all 13 games last year. Now he's primarily the number three safety, or the number two anyway, behind Antoine Winfield. So I'm going to see a lot of reps from Benny Sapp. But I'll say this about Benny Sapp. He physically looks like a freak. I mean, he's the best looking safety Minnesota has. He's 6'1", long, chiseled. But again, now we finally get to see when the bullets fly. Can he make tackles at the line of scrimmage? How does he feel after Saturday? Because it's going to be his first football game for from a safety position since Eden Prairie as a senior there. So it's been a while. Behind them, I think it gets even more, I shouldn't say dicey, but the depth isn't here yet. Is it going to be Tyler Newbin, who's going to get here in the summer? Is it going to be the junior college safety Javarius Owens, a first-team All-American junior kid that Minnesota's going to get here in June? Because behind them, it's Solomon Brown, who's an early enrollee from Florida. C.J. Smith is a redshirt freshman from Florida. Both are working at the safety position, but I think each one of them needs another 12, 18 months in the weight room, whereas I think Tyler Newbin and Javarius Owens could provide that immediate depth once they get here this summer.
All right. So lastly, when talking about safety, I guess when I see this group, what are you going to be, or not when I see this group, when you're looking at this group, what are you most looking for in terms of improvement? Because there is so little that we know about them, maybe not improvement, but what are you looking for them to showcase in this spring game?
Tackling. And I'd love to make sure that these guys aren't seeing a lot of broken coverages, because it's going to be Joe Rossi's first season as Minnesota's true full-time defensive coordinator. He's going to have his own calls. It's Joe Harris-Simiak's first time in a game type of environment working with these safeties. You're not going to see a lot of Antoine Winfield on Saturday. So you're looking at two guys as underclassmen in Benny Sapp and Jordan Howden. How do they come up and how do they tackle at the line of scrimmage? How do they take on tight ends and wide receivers as they're trying to run block them? Can they shed them and make the play? How do they do in pass coverage when Minnesota goes a single high safety over the top? Is that safety deep enough to where he doesn't get beat over the top, where we saw that a couple times last year without Winfield? It's going to be all about how do these guys come up and diagnose things at the line of scrimmage? How do they break down at the line of scrimmage? And how do they make the play at the line of scrimmage in terms of what they're tackling? And then in the pass coverage, can they direct things for the other people on this defense, and can they make sure they don't get beat deep? As I mentioned, I am tremendously intrigued to see how Minnesota safeties perform on Saturday.
All right. So I think that more or less is going to wrap up this, this episode, you know, mostly focusing on the defense for spring ball. I guess any last comments, you know, on the defense in general before we close this out?
It's going to look a lot different this fall. If this spring is any indication, and from what I've seen and from what I've heard from Gopher sources, you're going to see a lot of different personnel packages and a lot of different styles of defense. I mentioned it and I prefaced it before this defensive talk, is you're going to see a lot of fitting scheme to the players, not necessarily players to the scheme. When you have guys like Carter Coughlin, Boye Mafe, Thomas Rush, guys that are 6'3", 6'4", long, twitchy, and they can bend, you want to get all these guys on the field to make sure that you can rush the passer. Because, yes, Joe Rossi's going to throw some different blitz packages at folks, including, I think Minnesota Viking fans will be very familiar with, potentially a double A gap show where there's only one down defensive lineman and you're showing like 6 or 7 at the line of scrimmage. I mean, you're going to see a lot of creativity. You're going to see 4-3, 4-2-5, 3-4. And like I said, I've even seen 1-5-5. I mean, you're going to see a lot of different packages, which I'm ecstatic about, because you want to make sure with the personnel you have, I'm sure Joe Rossi wants to settle into a couple different things, but when the players dictate that you have currently on the roster, that you have to kind of deviate from that, that's where you have to embrace that change and run with it, and that's what I think Joe Rossi has done this spring.
All right, if you guys want a summary of what Ryan sees at the spring game, I mean, obviously you can watch it for yourself on both BTN2Go and BTN. I think it streams live on BTN2Go and then will air on BTN at 4 p.m. on Saturday. I'm sure they'll play it numerous times over the summer. But if you want Ryan's assessment, as he said, check that out on GopherIllustrated.com. For Ryan, for myself, we want to thank you all for listening, and go Gophers.